I'm Mary. I'm the Archives Chair for Nassau General Service, and I'm here with Jimmy O in Long Beach. Today is February 10th, 2018, and Jimmy's going to just tell us a little bit about his sobriety and his, he has some great memories of his relationship with Lois Wilson. And so, Jimmy, first, maybe you could tell us, when did you get sober? How?
I'm sober 44 years.
Okay, and you've always been a member of
AA.
Of Serenity AM?
No, I was in different groups as I got. I was in the Long Beach group when it started. I was in Cedarhurst group. I would go to. But I stayed, through the grace of God, I was able to take step one. I was a functioning drunk. I worked with. I was in a relationship with a codependent girl, naturally. And I knew of AA, but I had a very. I had an image of AA as something like the Salvation Army. You go there to give you a cup of soup, you sing a few songs to Jesus, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And that was it. But my how I got into AA, it was my girlfriend called me up. I always say she was stunning, she was gorgeous, but she had the voice of Audrey Meadows from The Honeymooners. And she said those words. She said, "We got to talk." "You got to talk about what?" She says, "You know," and hung up, hangs up. And I knew I was in trouble. I don't know what I did. Whatever I did, I'm going to hear the mouth, you know? So a bell went off, and I really took a spot check inventory of myself and my drinking. And I knew that I didn't ask whether you were an alcoholic or not. I knew I had gotten in trouble many times with drinking, but I knew I could always stop on my own, which I did. But something told me, you know, Jimmy, you are at a point in your life where you got to stay stopped. How do you stay stopped? And all I heard, saw was this thing, AA. So to get her off my back, I said, "Let me go over there." So I called AA and I said, "Are you AA?" And he said, and I said, "Now listen to me very carefully." And I told him about this fictitious uncle of mine. And the guy listened. And then he asked me, "Do you think you have a problem? You have a problem with alcohol?" I "What are you kidding?" And I said, "All right, a little bit, you know, little thing." And he told me there's a meeting in Long Beach that night. And it was very interesting. I had a love affair at that time with Gallo Hardy Burgundy wine. And I had a gallon in there. Mm-hmm. And that man said, "Do you have any alcohol in the house?" I said, "Of course." He said, "We suggest that you pour it out." And I opened up the refrigerator and I got the phone on my neck and I'm pouring this thing out. And I went to the meeting that night. I walked in, got there, or I get dressed up because you're going among these poor things. You know what I mean? Really. And you have such class. So I got all dressed up and I came in and I sat down and I saw the shades and I saw step one. And that leaped off the pages right at me. And it was saying to me what I already knew, but I didn't know how to verbalize. Mm. And I felt like I entered into something like a set of gloves, hands coming together. This is your home. This is where you belong. And I took that step to heart that night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they told me, "We're not saying you're never going to drink again. All we say is you don't drink for today. Can you do that?" And I said, "Of course, you idiots. What are you..." And that's how I... And each time I grew in the... I go to a meeting, somebody said something. It was like a piece of a puzzle. Yes, yes. And I just fell in love with the program. And, I mean, when I came in those days, there was no meetings in Nassau County on Saturdays. You went to meeting, no, there was none. Before, it was 1974. You went to meeting Saturday night.
Okay.
But there was no meetings during the day. And I said, "Well, where do you go?" And they said, "Well, oh no, you go tonight." And I started the first AA meeting in Nassau County on Saturday afternoons, high noon,
oh, okay.
In Long Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, I started that. And The Episcopal priest at St. James Church was there. He loved AA, and you know, I look back, the rent was $15 a month. Oh my God.
Can't even make coffee for that.
All right. But, and he said, he gave it the name. He said, what's the name of the group? I don't know. And at that time, there was a famous movie out with Gary Cooper, a black and white called High Noon. Mm-hmm. And there was a song, Do Not Forsake Me, oh my, all right. He said, why don't you call it High Noon? I said, all right. And that's how we got the name. And it's history ever since.
Okay.
So through the grace of God, I mean, learned so much with the steps and so on and so forth. Now, I had this great aunt of mine who I dreaded. I always say, you know the slogan, live and let live? She never heard of it. And I knew she went to this, I couldn't even pronounce it, this Al-Anon thing, Al-Anine, Al-Anon, I don't know what mm-hmm. it was. But she would come down here to visit her sister, who was my grandmother who lived here. And I would be drinking, and she would follow me from room to room with the first step, you know. And it's the first drink that gets you drunk, and have you turned your will and your life? Oh, good God, you know. She was a... But one day she said something to me that really hit me between the eyes. She said, you know, brother, when you stop drinking, you're not giving up anything. You're getting rid of something that's ruining your life. And boy, that hit me right between the eyes. I knew she was right. So you might say I was on my way to a bottom. Mm-hmm. And it came when my significant other said, we got to talk. So it's been a journey. It's been the most, I'm so grateful to have gotten into program. Now, my aunt, I knew she went to this Al-Anon thing, whatever you call it. One time, I was drinking and I was having a career. And I look out my window here and a van pulls up. And you slide the door and there's my great aunt with about 10 people from Al-Anon. Oh, good Jesus, here we go. She came to say hello, right? And they, you know, and they would come in here. And I, you know, in my paranoia, they had that Al-Anon look, you know what I mean? And you knew they were talking about me, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. And here we go, I had to get the speech. I'm going to tell Bill on you. And, oh, I don't know what she was talking about. But in recovery, I waited about a year. And then I called her up. I broke the news to her. How you doing, Aunt Sue? So on and so forth. And I said, listen, I'm sure you heard of that AA thing. Oh, yes. You know, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, I'm in it. Well, she was elated. Mm. Oh, my God. Why didn't you call me and tell me? Why did you? Oh, you know, I said, So that's what brought us together. Now, her husband had just died. He had 25 years in AA then, Jack. And they were very close. Jack and Bill Wilson were very close because Jack was a West Point graduate and he wound up a derelict in the street. Bill was in World War I in the artillery division or something. And they loved to talk about guns and wars. Oh, once they got started, the two of them. So my aunt called me up one day and she says, Jimmy, dear, could you do me a favor? I said, sure. I want to see my friend in Westchester, Lois Wilson. Would you drive me up? I said, sure. So she had her ritual. She would go Saturday. She'd go to the beauty parlor. I would pick her up. We would go. We went in there, and this is my nephew, Jimmy, who's an AA, boom, boom. And Lois hugged me and kissed me and hugged. And her and I just cemented together. And my knowledge of Bill Wilson is really hearsay from what Lois would tell me. And many, many times I was with Lois and Sue. I would take them out for rides in the car, and they would reminisce. Susie, remember Bill when we did them? And they would tell me stories that are just not written down.
Mm.
Or I would be in the kitchen with Lois, and she would be cooking lunch for me, and she would just start telling me stories. Now, one is that is not written down. And she told me this twice. She shared with me Bill Wilson's encounter in Towns Hospital with his spiritual awakening.
Okay.
And that he went through a depression for 3 days. He remembers, I was falling down a well backwards, and when do you hit the bottom? And he said, now, Ebby had planted the seed, find a God of your understanding, because Bill was against organized religion, mm-hmm. like many drunks are. And he cried out to himself, if there is a God, show yourself to me. It was a cry of help, help me. And I've seen the movie of Bill doing it, really him speaking it. And he says, and then it happened. The room lit up with such a brightness. And I remember so clearly the Venetian blind, what do you call it, the curtains, flying and hitting the Venetian blinds, banging. And this wind, this presence came through me, really the Holy Spirit, and the obsession to drink being ripped right out of him. But he said it also was like a deck of cards, a layout. I saw every second of my drinking life. And there was awareness that in spite of this, everything is going to be okay. And when it left him, he lay there in bed, and he thought he was crazy. I'm hallucinating. This is not happening. I know I'm a drunk. We can take that. But I don't want to be crazy. And, you know, then Silkworth came in, and he's telling this, and he's trying to get, am I crazy? And Silkworth calms him down and said, look at Bill, I'm not into spiritual things, but whatever happened, hold on to it. It's more than you had an hour ago. But here's the key. Silkworth said to him, look, Bill, I don't know what happened, but I'm going to tell you this. Something happened because I could see it in your eyes. Now, Bill knew something happened. Silkworth knew something happened, but the medical team did not know this. And they had a case conference with him. What do we do with this drug? How many detoxes are they? And Lois is telling me this. They called me up and they made a recommendation that he be committed to either Pilgrim State or Creedmoor or someplace. That this man is a gamma alcoholic, the bottom of the bottoms. And he ain't going to get 20 feet without drinking. And she told me, she says, Jimmy, I was devastated that I was going to lose Bill. And I came to the hospital the next day. And I walked into his room. He was laying in bed reading something. And all he did was look up at me. And then she said to me, Jimmy, it was like someone threw a spear across the room into my heart. When I saw his eyes, I knew in my heart he would never drink again. She told me that twice, and that's not written down. Okay? So there's so many stories that she would tell me and my aunt would tell me of her interaction with Bill. And just, I showed you the books that Bill and Lois wrote, assigned to her, and so on and so forth. I became very, very close with Lois, and she was so kind to me. She always wanted to feed me, and I asked Lois and Susie, we were having lunch together one day. I said to my, when's the last time you saw Bill? Oh, there was one story. When Al-Anon was getting started, the AAs were very threatened with this. And my aunt, see, what happened with Al-Anon is this. As I said earlier to you, I tell the Al-Anon people, they don't know this, that Bill Wilson started Al-Anon. And he was going around to the different groups trying to get a group conscience on the triangle of AA, Unity Recovery Service. And would be at the AA meeting, and the gavel would go down, okay, the meeting is starting. And half of the group would get up and they'd go sit outside while the AAs had their meeting.
Okay.
And Bill saw this. He's going outside. Oh, they're the family. You know, we have to have our anonymity. Blah, blah. So he wrote the name of the group down. He came back home. He had 88 groups he visited. And he said to Lois, listen, this is a family illness, and through the 12 steps, we all could get better. Originally, Lois wanted nothing to do with this. If you read her life, even in the movies they've made of her, you notice there was this urgency in her, a need for her to have her own home where she could put up curtains and be a normal person. Bill's going to do his AA thing, and I just want to make curtains and blah, blah, blah. But he kept talking to her. She had a friend, Anne, who she got together with. Now, my great aunt Sue L. started something in Jackson Heights in 1940-something or other. Okay. Her husband was a derelict drunk, brilliant man, West Point graduate. My aunt tells a story. She was an executive for a printing company, and she had to give a presentation at some company. And she said, Jack disappeared. He's on one of his runs. And I'm taking the bus on 34th Street to go over to the east side. Now, you can't make this up. The bus stops a red light. I look out the window, and laying on the street is my husband. So I had to get off, pick him up, forget about the lecture, whatever I was giving, the talk, and I took him home. So Bill got Lois to think about this, to get this thing going. So my aunt had started something in Jackson Heights where you just got together and vented your feelings. Really, Jack, the son of a bitch. My uncle, I thought my uncle's last name was son of a bitch. It was Jack, the son of a bitch. But Lois called Sue up and says, would you help me with this? Now, Jack got into AA before this. My aunt went to her doctor, and she said, listen, I can't go on with my husband. And we're married 27 years. Our family excommunicated her. Okay. We told you not to marry this drunken. So she was so alone. The doctor said, look, I heard of this secret society. And that's what he said. This secret society called AA or alcohol, all right? I got a name of a patient. He goes there. And my aunt called him. He gave her the number of AA Intergroup. She called AA and she says, and I'm quoting her, are you drunks that don't drink? And yeah, we don't drink. Are you sure you don't drink? Yeah, we sure don't drink. Listen, I need someone to come and talk to my husband. But he has to wear a suit. And he has to be intelligent, because Jack only talks to intelligent people. And the guy kidding us says to a lady, we can't help you. We ain't got anybody. He was intelligent, all right? Hey, Jack, Larry, they got anybody out in Akron intelligent? Nah, not out there. What are they doing? They're kidding us. But they sent this guy to talk to my great uncle, and it didn't work. So she's crying. She calls AA. You got to send, please. So now they sent a little guy. He was a Jewish guy. They say there's no Jews in AA. There, believe me. And he looked like the actor Peter Falk. Mm-hmm. He was in the Venetian blind business. And he came and he had the thing with the screwdrivers on his side. He smoked a horrible Italian cigar. And he came in. And my uncle, great uncle, tried to impress him that he was a West Point man, and he showed him his diploma with the eagle, you know, and the flags and all that. Mm-hmm. And the guy says to him, oh, look at this thing, all in Latin and everything. He says, you must be brilliant, you know, that Jack was eating it up. And he says to my great uncle, you know, shithead, you think you would know it's the first drink that gets you drunk. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And this guy just meshed with my uncle. And he went to AA that afternoon with him. And Jack surrendered to the program. And that became his way of life. And my great aunt, she spoke for my fifth anniversary. Mm-hmm. And I had a group conscience. was this was Al-Anon, you know, and would you mind? Oh, they were overwhelming, absolutely. And the Al-Anon people came through the windows. They were all right to hear. And she said something that was very helpful to AA and Al-Anon. You know, I thought I was fighting Jack for 17 years with the bottle. And I learned from Lois and Bill, you weren't fighting Jack, you were fighting alcoholism. And I had to separate the two. And my husband and I, we didn't know each other as a sober couple. And we had to make a decision to go through a whole new courtship and trust each other and grow through with the 12 steps and let's see what happens. And Susie said that when my husband died, after his 25th anniversary, let me tell you what the 12 steps gave us. I lost more than a husband. I lost my best friend. So, but when Al-Anon was starting, Bill gave them the 24th Street Clubhouse, a room upstairs, which they nicknamed, quote, Lois's sweatshop. Now, he took Susie and Lois and a few to the AA World Service. And they said, do you have any, you know, little like little kids, do you have any letters from the wives? And AA broke out laughing and brought them into an attic room. They had to sit. And on the shelves in shoe boxes were letters from wives from all over the world. What do I do with my husband? Or what can I do with my son? And the AAs didn't know what to tell them. So they took these boxes and they went down to the 24th Street Clubhouse. And as I showed you in the book, Lois Remembers, her side of the whole story, where she specifically writes, my aunt, Susie, from some unknown source, would supply us with the manuscript papers. Susie was in the printing business, and at night she would go in the garbage or any paper left over, get it together, and go meet with Lois and these few women, and that's how they wrote to the wives to get donations, to get us so on and so forth. They started to grow. And Bill was so good to them. And the main thing he told them is you've got to learn the 12 traditions. All right? And she remembered that. And I have a manuscript here that I'll show you. In fact, it's right here. So Bill Wilson Lois and my aunt presenting Al-Anon. And there's a line in there where Bill says, here it is, this is 1961, where Bill says to them, welcomes them, starting this fellowship. And Bill Wilson, I'm quoting him, so we AAs, along with our affection and our congratulations to you, do bring you our deep regret, as well as what little restitution we can make at this late date for all the emotional, spiritual, and physical damage our drinking days imposed upon you. Mm. Right here. Mm. All right? Mm-hmm. And he guided them, and then they had to pick a name. What are we going to call this thing? And women submitted names, wives and spouses, AA auxiliary, so on and so forth. And my great aunt thought, well, Alcoholics Anonymous was so tied to it. Alcohol, Al, Anonymous, Non, Al-Anon. And submitted this. They voted, and my Aunt Sue said, Lois pointed to her and said, Susie, you win. It's Al-Anon. And that was it. They gave their lives to these movements. They would travel all over. They would go to conferences. They would... But they were so anonymous and deeply spiritual people. You could taste it in them. You could, and they were really servants. I was complaining to Lois one day about a group I started. And she smiled at me and she says, she always going, Jimmy dear, and here we go. It takes someone to start something. But it's the ones who come after that are the important ones. Walk away. And she shared with me how she had to detach from Al-Anon and let them, they have the 12 traditions, they have the print, and let them, all right? And I became, this woman who I dreaded while I was drinking, my great aunt, became my dearest friend. And riding in a car, taking Lois and her out for this, I took Lois Wilson, I don't remember the occasion, but I take her to an AA meeting. 93 years old. And she comes in all bent over with her cane and everything. We sit down and no one knows who she is. And they go around the room. I'm Joe, I'm an alcoholic. I'm Margaret, I'm an alcoholic. And she says, my name is Lois and my husband was an alcoholic.
Did they know who she was then?
Huh? Then the bell would have, oh my God, you know. And she was very gracious after the meeting. She talked to you and so on and so forth. And I showed you the book here, my great uncle's 12 and 12. And she wrote to me, I'm so proud. I knew your uncle so well. I'm so proud to sign this for you, Lois, and stuff. My great aunt was 88 years old when she passed away. She was all alone. And I live in Long Beach here. I had her in South Nassau Community Hospital in Oceanside. And I had Lois's phone number, private phone number. And I called up Lois and I'm trying to tell Lois in a gentle way that I said, you know, Lois, Susie's in the hospital now and she's taking care of her. And well, what room is she in? I gave her the phone number. And I go there every day at 3 o'clock. Lois would call her, and on the phone by the pillow, they would talk. And it was funny when I come to the room each day, all of a sudden I notice flowers all around the room. So I said, who's that? Oh, Lois. Lois sent Lois. She's sending all these flowers. And Lois says to me, Jimmy, do you think, I'll never forget it. She says, Jimmy, do you think if I send her more flowers, she'll get better? You know, and I'm trying to tell her, Lois, she's, and that's how my aunt just fell asleep, and, you know. Lois wrote me a beautiful letter. I have a nephew in recovery, and when my great aunt died, I went to her apartment in Jackson Heights, which was an AA Al-Anon archive. Mm. In her closet was a picture album like this. And the dust was this high on it. And I got a garbage pail and I cleaned it up. And they were original 33 and a third records of AA's first World Service Conference in 1950 in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
The whole conference. And there was a set, there was records where, which were beautiful, of Dr. Bob speaking, you know, of Bill's, Dr. Bob privately speaking. Bill presenting the 12 traditions for group conscience. And, you know, meaning well, I gave them to my nephew who lost this. I had Christmas cards that Bill and Lois would send to me. I gave them to him. He lost them. It breaks your heart. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Bob was the best. As I say, he talked like a truck driver from the east side. This mug Wilson came out here. I straightened the old lady out right away. But I love the part he says, which is really not true, but he said to the AA people, I am honored that you gave me this title of co-founder. But you need to know, while I have you all here publicly, that I had little or very nothing to do with the writing of this program. Bill did everything. And he would send it out to me. I'd laugh when I hear it. And I'd look it over and I'd say, I have no idea what he's talking about. And I'd write him back, I say, Bill, it sounds great to me, you know, whatever you He had the mind, he had the vision, he was five steps ahead of you. Mm. So it's there that the 12 steps were officially a part of the program. Mm. I asked my great aunt, we're having lunch with Lois and Aunt, and I said to him, when was the last time you spoke to Bill, saw Bill? And they looked at each other and they said the same thing. My aunt said, we were with him at the conference in 1970 in Miami, Florida. He was very ill with the emphysema. And if I remember his name correctly, his name was Tom. He was in the Baldwin group. He was an old timer. And they were down there in Florida. They went to the hospital and kidnapped him. And they took him out of the hospital. My aunt said he had brown pants, a green jacket, and a shirt. And they brought him out. And it was a round theater. Now, in those days in AA, even when I came into AA, when you celebrated your first anniversary, you got a cigarette lighter. Okay. They all smoked like hell, mm-hmm. and you couldn't even. And with AA on it, mm-hmm. on the lighter. And Bill came out, he looked up, and this was so beautiful. He looked around, and he said so simply to all you AAs that I will never meet, that I will never see. If you only knew how much I love you. And may God bless Alcoholics Anonymous for as long as he may need us. Not forever. What you mean? And he went like this. He threw a kiss and he waved goodbye. And Lois and my aunt are standing there. And they said, we were in hysterics. And he was dead 2 days later. Yeah, the emphysema. But like I said to you earlier, my relationship with him is secondhand, but mm-hmm. firsthand. Like the four Gospels in Christianity, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew and John were the only ones that knew Jesus. Luke and Mark never knew him. Mm-hmm. But they heard the stories, and they wrote them down. And that's where I'm at. I might have met Bill once, as I said, as a young boy, because he had the 24th Street Clubhouse, and my grandparents lived on 24th and 8th Avenue. We lived on 25th and 8th Avenue. And my aunt would come over, Susie, to see her mother and two sisters and brothers. And they always brought people for lunch. Okay. And Lois and Bill are not going to turn down a nice Italian antipasto and stuff. And I have to be my twin sister and I were tap dancers. At 6, 7 years old, we had and he came in with Lois, and we had to do our routine, Sioux City, Sioux City. And I say Bill was traumatized. He almost relapsed, you know what I mean, with these two little kids. Yeah. But I know him in my heart. I could see him. And there's a lot of stories I probably forgot. Like one story, when we read the big book, where Dr. Bob finally clicked into this. Mm-hmm. I told you, and he's going to carry the message. And he calls up Towns Hospital. And in the big book, it says how nicely he tells the nurse, I got this mug from New York. We got a cure for alcoholism. Get a drunk and put him in the room. We'll be right over. And the nurse, what they didn't put in the book was, and here's Dr. Bob telling me this on the we got this cure for alcoholism, and she says, tell me, doctor, have you tried it on yourself? Your track record over here is a disaster. And he says, don't get cute, sweetheart. Just put the drunk in the room. But they couldn't put that in the big book. But that's how he was, Dr. Bob. And it was a joy. I still cherish the many moments I had with Lois and her kindness to me. I had to go out as a young guy and pick flowers with her all the time. Today I cherish it at the time. When we would be there, when my aunt and Lois wanted to talk privately, Lois would say to me, Jimmy dear, you know, why don't you go upstairs to the museum? Your aunt and I need to talk. And I would get out of there. You know, so I would have to go hide upstairs and play upstairs, whatever I had to do. You know? But I was at her funeral. She was, I believe, 97 when she died. She was buried, I believe, in that church in New York City where Vincent Peale was a minister. And at the end, she was very, I could sense her loneliness. because everyone that she knew was such a part of the AA and Al-Anon were passing away. But what could I say? Through the grace of God, I got 44 years in recovery. I still go to my meetings. I have my 10 o'clock meeting every day. And, you know, I try to tell stories about Bill and Lois that Lois told me. And many people are interested. Many people are not interested. You'd be surprised if they're not interested in the founding of the program or the founder. But I'm grateful to God that for my great aunt, I see what she really did. And boy, she would travel all over for Al-Anon and AA. And one day, when they get started with Lois's sweatshop, that little room and stuff like that, my aunt wanted to have a meeting and set up tables, and the AAs wouldn't do it.
Hmm.
And my aunt went out on 8th Avenue to a public phone, and with 5 cents in those days, she called World Service, and she called Bill crying. And he says, "Susie, what's the matter?" She says, I'm in the clubhouse, and I need help setting up some tables and chairs, and the AA people won't do it to me, won't help me." And he knew what was going on. And he says, "Susie, where are you?" She says, "I'm outside by the phone." And he told her, "Susie, honey, calm down. Don't move. I'll be right there." And he got out of World Service. He took a cab down to the 24th Street Clubhouse. He grabbed my aunt by the hand, and they went in together. And he says, "Is there a problem here?" "Oh, no, Bill. What are you doing?" And he says, "Don't you ever do this. These people again, they're a part of our family."
Mm.
I remember her telling me that, yeah. Mm. The AAs were very, this family thing was starting, that you would be against us, or so, I don't know, whatever they thought. But she would reminisce and tell me things, of stories and stuff. So I'm blessed to have known her and really known Bill through her.
So, I mean, you tell me now, you started the
Kainugu.
What else? Let me tell me a little more about your recovery, your sobriety.
Well,
like, do you think AA has changed in the last
40
years?
Yes, definitely AA has changed with the drug addiction.
Okay.
With the duly addicted. The wisdom of the traditions are beautiful. It's the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. I was at a meeting one day, and my group, they're fanatics that someone will identify themselves. "I'm Joe, I'm an alcoholic." You don't say, "Who are you? What are you? What are you?" They shove it down your throat. And I tell them, "You're in violation of the traditions."
Right, yeah.
I said, once in a while, I'll set them up. I'll say, "My name is Jimmy, and I have a desire to stop drinking." Well, they go nuts. And I said, I was at a meeting one day, and I did that. I said, "You people are violating the traditions by shoving that this person must identify themselves as an alcoholic. They're here to hear, identify with the story so they can come to their own conclusion. The wisdom of Alcoholics Anonymous is they have open meetings. Now, why do they have open meetings? So someone with a problem would go there. They don't have to speak. They don't have to identify themselves. They have a donut and coffee. They listen to the speakers. They say, "Oh my God, that happened to me. Holy Jesus, that happened to me." And you peel away the denial. And so that person on their own can internalize and say, "My God, if that I very well may have a drinking problem. I might be an alcoholic." But they have to arrive at their own conclusion to that. The group cannot shove it down their throat. And I said this in a meeting, and 5 people later, a man stood up and he said, "This is my second meeting. And I want to thank that guy. Because I can't take the pressure of you telling me that I have to say I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what I am." But that they have to get away from it. Now, it is a reality that most of the people coming in today in the program are on both.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reality. And they're certainly welcomed into AAs. what I try to highlight to them is this, the traditions and how they came. Bill Wilson was brilliant in studying the downfall of the Oxford group and all these other movements that came up. And he always said, we have to learn from them what not to do. Okay? And when people come in, I personally have no problem with this. I was at the time I was on drugs, so I have no problem with that. But what is your primary purpose when you go to AA? Stay sober. And do what?
Help another alcoholic.
Okay. Now, I'm quoting Bill Wilson. The drunk comes in here, he don't want to be here. He's forced to come here. Mm-hmm. Out of pain, out of a court, out of something. He, his wife, I don't want to hear the mouth anymore. All right. I'm looking for a hook to get out of here. And Joe gets up and he says, my name is Joe. I'm a drug addicted, alcohol, blah, blah, and goes on 20 minutes about his heroin. What does that guy say? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I never used heroin in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. This is not for me. I have enough stigma with my alcohol. I don't need another one. All right? And this, I'm quoting Bill. We have sentenced him to death. I, whether I'm on crack, heroin, cocaine, whatever it is, I come here, I certainly mentioned it was a part of my, but I'm going to, my name is to highlight, how do we connect with the alcohol? What is it that unites us as a fellowship? Mm-hmm. That's what I have to home in on. Mm-hmm. If I went on a 12-step pool, there's a drug here, I'm not going to tell him about my crack use and my heroin. I want him to, what did you drink? Beer? Oh, geez, I drank beer. I did, all right? I want him to identify with us. I want him to know he belongs. Mm-hmm. There's your first tradition. There's the 12th carrying the message to who? We are not a multi-purpose program. Now, my experience, and it's just my experience, I've had many people with good time in AA who also belong to NA. Mm-hmm. And when they come into AA, my name is Jack, I'm a recovering, I'm an alcoholic. They don't say I'm duly addicted, course addicted, happy addicted, whatever, all right? Because I know I'm here with my brother, alcoholics, we have one thing in common. When I go to NA, that's it. Now, I had a guy I sponsored, and he respected the 12 traditions. And he's in the landscaping business. And he would come to AA. My name is Ralph, I'm an alcoholic. Let's do his thing. But he was in NA also. And he invited me to his 5th anniversary. Of course I go. It's an open NA meeting, etc. And I saw people from my fellowship. Hey, Ralph! This guy got up and he talked. He told his story. I almost fell over. You talk about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Mm-hmm. He was another person. I had no idea this side of him, this dimension of him. All right? And then I understood. Now, also, you ask AA people, or you ask the NA people. Come in. Okay. Who started AA? Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, remember. Who started NA? Oh, no. I did my own research. It was started in Long Beach, California around 1960. Jimmy Kay. Mm-hmm. He was a heroin addict. Mm-hmm. He went to AA, the poor thing. He went there. And he said in his biography, I'm sitting there, I'm going on and on, and these, quote, good people of AA are looking at me. And I saw them. They have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. And I knew I needed a room like this, quote, for people like me. Mm-hmm. And he said something, he quoted Bill Wilson. This misconception from rehabs that as a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug is a fallacy. Bill Wilson put it beautiful with the drug addict. We are cousins, but we're not brothers and sisters. Mm. Now, I'm dealing with alcohol. What is alcohol? It's a legal drug. I can go to the liquor store. I go to the bar. I can't do that. Right. All right. I'm living a completely different lifestyle. Okay? Certainly it's more, I would say this with empathy and compassion for the drug addict. Their life is more damaging and more, what's afflicted on them is beyond my imagining. I had a heroin addict, and I'm going to say this on tape, I had a heroin addict say to me, who goes to both programs, do you know how I got better from my heroin? I went to NA, and here's what a guy said. I had my two daughters go out and prostitute themselves so that I could have money for my... Did you ever give anybody oral sex to get a beer? Mm. I did that to get heroin. Mm-hmm. Now, in recovery, I had to live with that, the pain of that. How did I get better? When I heard four other men in NA over a period of say they did it. Because I thought I was the only one to degrade themselves. And there was my healing. In 100 years in AA, I would never hear that. So that's why Bill Wilson was right. We're cousins. But we're not brothers and sisters. And also, I find, and it's just my opinion, when somebody comes in and they're relapsing in AA, all right, well, what are you relapsing on? And they'll tell you marijuana, crack, a little bit, but I'm not drinking. We have a moral obligation to refer them to the program that would help them. When I say keep coming back, I'm going to kill this poor man, this woman. I'm not saying don't come here. I'm saying, you know, if my teeth hurt me, right. Moron, go to the dentist. But one old-timer in NA said it to me beautifully. The reason many of them come into AA and try to make AA a multi-purpose program is this. It's too painful to hear these things. Mm. When I go into AA for my drug problem, I'm totally in control. Because I tell you what I want you to hear. And it's safe for me. Because I'm not going to hear the real things I did there. Okay? And many people will do that. That's just my opinion. I have never told someone to leave AA. I have many people who are cross-addicted. But in time, when they ask me and I tell them about the condition, I will see them. All of a sudden start saying, my name is Ralph, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jane, I'm an alcoholic. They start to realize. Now, I'm here this morning at an AA meeting. Tonight, I'll be at an NA meeting. And they're living the program, and they're really living the traditions.
Yeah.
But it has changed. I am also, and this has come home to me personally as a Roman Catholic deacon. Because I do a lot of wake services. And I'm on duty Thursday nights, and I'll get it on my email. I'll get, Jimmy, you got a funeral, Towers Funeral Home, Thursday night. Margaret, 24. I know what it is. It's an overdose. I'm going in there. And I'm getting more and more of these people. And it's so sad. It's tragic. It's an epidemic in America. There's no question about it. But I do embrace anybody who comes into this program and has a desire to stop drinking. But as I say, we have a moral obligation to refer them to NA or GA or whatever, to let them know it's there. And they're coming here because they're hurting. We just have that obligation. That's my...
Yeah, another old-timer told me that Wilson said that we would kill a lot of people because we were going to try to help people that we had no business trying to help.
See, that came from social workers. I'm a retired substance abuse counselor.
Okay.
I was 30 years a counselor. I worked at St. John's Episcopal Hospital in Far Rockaway. 12 years in the outpatient program and 17 years or so in the detox unit. And these social workers, God bless them, many of them beautiful people, but have no knowledge of the 12-step program. Mm. And a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. And they maintain that. Where I would always say, go to both programs. All right? And but most people coming in today definitely are on both.
Mm.
There's no question about it. And they got to be welcomed into AA. But just let them know the traditions. That's my personal... I'd gone to a meeting the other day. My name is Ralph. I'm a cross-addicted alcoholic. Why? And that was the last word of alcohol I ever heard.
Mm.
Mm. It was a 25-minute drug log. And what I'm finding is very interesting in most groups, and I've had other old-timers tell me the same thing, nobody says anything. They let it pass. They let it pass.
Do you think that's good or bad?
I think it's very bad. I don't think you should embarrass that person, but call them aside or... because, you know, in one of the traditions, Bill speaks about that all AA people, all of us, you all have become the custodian of the traditions, whether you like it or not. And he may be doing it out of ignorance, but I have found most of them do it out of arrogance. There's a personality trait of defiance.